things at all different levels, but this one is more, you have to have a solid mind if you want a solid life.
Right. And as a world, they don't encourage you to think through those processes anymore.
That's why I'm always talking about you're trained to think in a certain way.
Right.
And we're going to point out how this hurts you instead of helps you.
Right. And so I think being aware of that, us walking through this and you being able to wrestle through it. Again, Pastor Doug said it. You need to wrestle through this. You need to go through the steps and go, do I believe this? Is this true? Is this true? Is this true? Then this must be true. And that's going to solidify what you believe so much more. So
yeah, like this whole podcast is for you, the listener.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast, the podcast designed to coach you up in your faith. The more you know, the more you can grow. Our goal is not to tell you what to think, but to help you think for yourself, because this is how your faith grows. When you know what you believe and why you believe it, you become a stronger person. My name is Jesse Mayer. I'll be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the salty pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peak.
Welcome, everyone. It's so good to be with you in this podcasting season. Really enjoy what we're doing. If you would love to help us continue to see this podcast ministry grow. It's really been reaching a lot of people. We would like you to like and subscribe by going to our YouTube channel, look up The Salty Pastor, hit the like button, which is a thumbs up, and then subscribe to it. The more subscribers we get, then the more the algorithm recognizes the actual program and suggests it to people. And so this has been really good. I just got an email from a lovely young lady yesterday who said, you know, I went and listened to the Weeds in Our Garden series.
Yep.
And she said, I listened to all the Salty Pastors, and she says, it has turned me back to God and the church.
That's amazing.
And she said, it's amazing to realize that it's okay to not be okay, and that even when I don't feel worthy, God gives me value and loves me.
Mm.
And so this ministry is making a difference in people's lives. People are using it to refer to their friends, and their friends are learning. And I hope this new series that we're going to be doing is really going to help a lot of people who have friends who are skeptical of faith and sometimes maybe even tease them about being so irrational because they believe. I'm hoping it really helps you know what you believe and why you believe it.
Well, we are starting a brand new series today. We just finished up Easter, and we're kicking off a new series, and it's all about the foundation of faith, the foundation on which you try to answer the question, why am I here? It's all about thinking. We live in a world that's trying to convince you that faith and reason are opposites, that they're opposed to one another. Mm-hmm. So we're going to dig into this challenge. Is it rational to believe in God? Is there a belief that there's a God completely irrational? I mean, there's so many things, or is it actually the most rational thing you can think
of?
One
or the other.
The world will tell you one. I think Pastor Doug probably has a different viewpoint. So we're hoping to discover those answers to these questions and why it's so important to ask them and think through them. Why you should come to your own conclusion about this question. So let's kick it off, Salty Pastor. What's cooking?
Well, I think the most important question any person will ever consider is whether there is a God or not. Mm. And what's interesting is everybody believes that is the case about this question. Those who believe there is a God totally agree. And those who do not believe there is a God believe that this question is the most important one. Because what both sides do is they both realize that when you ask yourself this question, you are asking yourself, how do I actually view the world in which I live?
Mm.
You see, your position on whether there is a God or not is the foundation of how you view everything else in the world, even your position in the world. It's a defining characteristic of your world view, your belief system. A worldview is your definition of what it means to be a human being, to actually live and be alive, and the value of other human beings. That's called a world view. When a person says, I don't believe there is a God, what they are saying to me is that they believe human beings have no intrinsic meaning or purpose. The existence of life, what they're telling me, is a result of random chance. Life is not special or unique at all. It's not sentient, meaning the notion that there is a you that makes up you is kind of an illusion. This is what atheists say. And of course, you don't have a soul because a soul is a figment of your imagination. Mm. When you say you don't believe in God, it tells me whether you believe human beings are capable of changing or not. When a person believes there is no God, according to Sam Harris and other leading atheists like Dillahunty and so forth, there's no free will. And if there's no free will, you can't change because everything is determined. It also tells me that you don't believe human beings have value, because if you're just a part of an evolutionary cycle and there is no God, then there's no value to your life at all. This is why most people really struggle with atheism when they really get into it, is because it's nihilistic. Mm. So nihilistic means it takes you down one road, one highway, and there's no exits. And the end of it is absolutely no meaning.
Right.
Complete despair. That's called nihilism. And that's where it always ends up. And so that's why atheists have always struggled getting their numbers above 10% of the population. So they're working really hard to do more, but in the end, nobody can live that way. You can't live with absolutely no meaning, no purpose, no value to your life. Therefore, the most important question you will ever ask yourself is whether or not there is a God. What you believe to be the answer to that question determines everything else in your life. This is the essence of what it means to have an examined life. Remember, Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. The Old Testament has kind of like a parallel passage. It's very similar to that. It says, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Now, that statement is the answer to the question, is there a God? Right? And the answer is, well, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. In other words, if you understand the way the Hebrew word wisdom is used, it's often referenced to life. So your whole life, the wisdom that you gain in life, the meaning and purpose of life begins with answering the question, well, there is a God and he is real. So I think in the end, that's what we want to do, is we want to believe that there is a God, not because we want it to be true, but because it's the most rational thing to believe.
Well, and I think what this is really pointing to, like you said at the beginning, is you've always said this, what you believe is one of the mm-hmm. most important things about you, right? And
yes.
What you believe about God really matters, because it transforms what you think about yourself, mm-hmm. what you think about the world, the people around you. It gives you perspective. It changes your perspective on what happens to you in your life and how
yes.
you should react to it. And so all of these things are super important. And so you may go, well, why are you guys covering this? Why do you have, why are you covering this idea of, does God exist? Can't you just let people make a choice for themselves? And it's, you're saying, yes, you should make a choice for yourself, mm-hmm. but the choice is really important because it will literally affect everything in your life, even the things you don't think it will. Right.
Yeah, and you need to think about it. Don't be stupid. I mean, I know that's a salty thing to say, but don't. Examine it. Look at the
evidence.
Wrestle
with it.
Wrestle with it. Come to your own conclusion, because that's when you really have a conviction, and you need to have a conviction about this. You can't go through life willy-nilly thinking, well, maybe there is, maybe there isn't, and on some days I'm going to believe there isn't because it's better, and some days I will because I need it. That is a surefire way to lose yourself, live confused, have no meaning, no purpose, and not value other beings. It's just irrational to live in such a mental health crisis that you've created because you haven't resolved your position on this question. Because when it comes down to it, a belief that there is a God is the most rational and reasonable conclusion you will ever make in your life. You know, we can actually logically prove the existence of God. The highest capacity of human existence is our ability to think. That's why you should think through this, because that's when you are your most humanness, right? That's what sets you apart from the animal kingdom or from plants and rocks, is your capacity to think rationally. So when human beings take the time to think, to clarify their thinking, to ensure their thinking is not polluted by their own desires or manipulated by selfishness, when they're actually functioning at their best, this is our highest calling, an expression of our own humanness. We can think, We can reason. We have rationality. We have sentience. This is why we pursue, when we pursue our highest calling in this existence, it shows us God is real. It's when we're not pursuing this highest form of our humanness that we come to the conclusion that God doesn't exist. You see, what's interesting to me is that the fake intellectualism that is so rampant in the world today, masquerading as reason, it's filled with irrationality, stupidity, logical fallacies, and more, comes across as saying, well, this is the most reasonable thing to believe. Well, it's actually not. It's actually not. Frank Turk wrote a book called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And he lays out the case very well. He says it takes more faith. You have to be more irrational by an atheist definition of faith in order to be an atheist than it does to be a person who says, well, there is a God. Alvin Plattinga, Dr. Plattinga is a professor at Notre Dame University in their philosophy department, and he wrote a book called Where the Conflict Really Lies, and I've referenced this before on The Salty Pastor, but it's important to note because it helps us think through this clearly, and he says this basic equation. He says it's irrational to think that you are a rational being if you're an atheist. And he basically makes the argument in this way. He says, look, if you're an atheist, you say there is no soul, there is no spirituality, there's nothing beyond this scientific materialistic world, and so we evolved from nothing. Therefore, evolution specifically states that that things get better only for survivability. So if that's the case, it's irrational to think that your evolved brain is rational. Because that's not the goal of evolution. The goal is survivability,
right?
Not rationality. On the other hand, if you believe there's a God, it's more rational to believe that your mind is actually rational. What a great way to say it. So the conflict is it's irrational to believe that there is no God. And what I want in this series is I want skeptics to have to wrestle with this and answer these proofs in their own mind. What I want for those of you who maybe have never thought through these proofs before, I want your faith to grow stronger. Not because your faith is irrational, but because it is rational, and it's the most rational thing to do. Your faith today, in many ways, is under attack, and you have to understand that. In the world in which we live, we'll talk about this on Thursday in particular, there is a concerted effort that is irrational at its core that is going after what you believe. And what they are doing is they're trying to convince you of a falsehood. They're trying to tell you that it is more rational to believe there is no God than there is to be a God. But this is false. For instance, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who kind of goes around as a scientist, he makes these irrational arguments all the time. Bill Maher from, it used to be politically incorrect. Now he's on HBO. He does kind of this political talk show. Sam Harris, Dillahunty, other atheists. There's a lot of politicians. There is a political movement to reinstill Marxism and Marxist ideology. It's very prevalent in our universities and is gaining political power in the United States of America. They don't call themselves communists. They call themselves Marxists. It is a political movement, and they want to get rid of faith. That is their goal. Is to get rid of it because they see faith is not only strong, but it is actually a rational counterpoint to their positions. So if your faith is under attack, what should you do? Well, I'm going to tell you this. You don't worry about it because faith has always been under attack. It's always been in a battle. And it's since its inception, Jesus says, I'm in the battle and you're going to be in the battle. You're going to suffer at times. So it's been this way for 2,000 years. What gives us victory? What gives us confidence? What makes our hope stronger and more prevalent in our lives? It's when we reason through these things and we realize that we actually have not only the higher ground morally, but rationally as well. And we can prove that these things are true.
Yeah, I think I've been reading A Case for a Creator, which is by Lee Strobel, and just the amount of theories that he goes through to kind of like, he's coming at it from a journalistic perspective of what is this actually saying, right? Like, what does the science actually say about, is there a God? Were we created? Was there intelligent design or not, right? And he goes and speaks with all these scientists, and he's like, I've heard this theory. What about this theory? And they go through, oh, man, you're that, like, well, let me break it down for you, like, why these things don't make sense. And it's like that idea of, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. There's so many fallacies in so many areas where you literally have to turn a blind eye, or they're actively saying, well, we just don't know enough yet, but we're going to be able to figure it out eventually, versus, but all the evidence says this other thing is true, and they're actively running away from the evidence, saying that it's the Christians that are being irrational, right? And I think it's really important to be able to look at these things, and you don't necessarily need to have a physics degree, you don't need to have all these things, but you need to be able to look at it and go, is there a concerted effort of trying to convince me that something is irrational, when really the evidence points the other way? And I think that's what you're going to be walking us through over the next couple of weeks, is, okay, here's an argument. Yes. Let's logically walk through this, which is not something we do very often now, right?
Yeah, we try to talk about things at all different levels, but this one is more, you have to have a solid mind if you want a solid life.
Right. And as a world, they don't encourage you to think through those processes anymore.
That's
right?
Why I'm always talking about, you're trained to think in a certain way,
right?
And we're going to point out how this hurts you instead of helps you.
Right. And so I think being aware of that, us walking through this and you being able to wrestle through it. Again, Pastor Doug said it. You need to wrestle through this. You need to go through the steps and go, do I believe this? Is this true? Is this true? Is this true? Then this must be true. And that's going to solidify what you believe so much more. So
yeah, like this whole podcast is for you, the listener, to help you. It's not just to give information, but to help you wrestle with things that are going to help you over the long run. And so one of the things we have to do is kind of consider, okay, well, how did we get here? Why was I taught to think this way? It's very important to understand that Protestant Christianity ushered in the greatest expansion of knowledge in the history of the world. A lot of people need to realize that, okay? The reason why your faith is attacked is directly linked to this historical fact. Protestant Christianity ushered in the greatest expansion of knowledge in the history of the world. G.K. Chesterton wrote a response to the editor of the Clarion. This is in the early 20th century, meaning the early 1900s. And his name was Robert Blatchford. And he wrote this thing, God and My Neighbor. And when he wrote to him, he explains that Christianity as a religious philosophy is responsible for producing the highest intellects and the foundation of the strongest nations. Well, if you go back and you watch the movie Oppenheimer, if you go back and you look a lot of these physicists and a lot of these people during the late 1800s and early 1900s that did all this incredible study and everything, is that so many of them had deeply religious parents. Mm. You know, it's just fascinating to me how they chose not to live that way, and some of them were agnostic, and atheism was really in vogue at that time because of Darwinianism. But what's really amazing is that the first fallacy is that in order to be a scientist, you have to reject faith, and that's just completely untrue. As you all may know, as I'm a big reader, you know, I read lots of stuff. I like to read things. And one of the things I do in my downtime, you know, when I just want to kind of check my brain out or whatever, I read science fiction. Okay. So I read all kinds of science fiction. And people are like, why do you like reading that stuff? And I go, well, in reality, whether it's fantasy or science fiction, it all comes down to that everybody has a worldview. They're trying to describe reality. And so they have a position on God in every single one. And I'm always curious, what is their position of God? How do they reason to get there? So I read this stuff, you know, and I kind of enjoy it. And one that's out right now, super popular on Netflix, they made a series out of it. It's called The Three-Body Problem. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of the show. I haven't watched it
yet. Yeah, and so it's really fascinating because it's based on a science fiction novel, a trilogy that was written by a Chinese guy.
Okay.
And so, oh, that's interesting. It's East meets West, and so it's just kind of fascinating. But the three-body problem is a scientific problem in physics, okay? And here's what the three-body problem is all about, and that is we have all the math, all the calculus, and everything to predict the movement of a body, meaning a planet, through space, okay? And we can also predict how that unit, that body, will respond to another more powerful gravitational pull. So we can predict a two-body problem millions of years in the future with absolute accuracy. For instance, we know the exact orbit of Earth a million years from now. We can know exactly the distance it will be on any given day. The math is just unbelievable in what it could do. But guess what? There's a massive limitation to mathematics, and it's called, and physics, it's called the three-body problem. And that is whenever you introduce another powerful or equal powerful gravitational force into that mathematical system, it is impossible to predict its effect. So it becomes completely chaotic. There's no mathematical way to figure out how two separate gravitational bodies affect a third body as it moves through the gravitational fields.
Interesting.
It's called the three-body problem in physics, and no one can figure it out. Now, as a kind of a salty pastor, nerdy guy, this says a couple things to me that I get very excited about. Please let me know as I talk if this makes any sense to you. The first thing that it does is, just like why I love quantum physics or quantum mechanics, is because what it actually does is it starts to give you a little window into how big God really is, because we have no idea how big God is. We have absolutely no idea. But this starts to give you an idea, is that God not only knows the trajectory of every three-bodied problem, he knows the trajectory of every four-body, five-body, all the way to infinity. I mean, I just cannot even imagine that. We can't figure out a three-body problem.
Right.
And he knows every body problem. And not only does he know that just in basic physics and gravitational pulls, he knows that in the intellectual interactions that we have with people every single day that change and mold our free thinking and free will options. I mean, the probability here is so big, we cannot even imagine it. And God does this in his sleep. So just, number one, it shows me how big God really is. But back on track. What it also does, though, is it shows me how important it is to understand this whole notion that we need to prove there is a God, because if there is no God, then none of this advancement is possible. And the thing that bugs me about the three-body problem show is that it doesn't really accurately reflect the book very well, but what it does is they're constantly saying, well, I'm a scientist, I can't believe in God, as if this is just some fact that's right. Just accepted out there. And I'm going, well, first of all, that's just false, because somewhere between 40% of scientists, 50% of scientists believe they're all theists, and they say this. As a matter of fact, there's an explosion of theists in the really, really big things, physics, like planetary movements, and in the mathematical probabilities of fine-tuning. We're going to talk about these later on. We'll get into that more. I don't want to get stuck on this because I could talk forever about it. But what's really important to understand is that because our society was influenced predominantly, not controlled, but influenced by Protestant Christianity, it's produced some of the greatest minds and formed the strongest foundations of the strongest nations. But what happened is, and I've said this before, there was a faction of intellectuals, remember the Frankfurt School of Critical Social Theory, that postulated a form of Marxism. And this has struggled to gain a foothold until the 60s. And then in the 60s, it combined with the sexual revolution. And since then, it's become apparent that to achieve political goals, the foundation of belief for their opponents had to be undermined. And what you see this really taking root is during the Clinton administration in the 90s. And that is, this is when education in America took a very powerful political turn. Primarily the goal was to politicize education. And that's when we shifted in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, from purely a can you read, can you write, can you do mathematics, to you need to think in this way. And it was deconstructionist in its orientation. And the end goal of this, in my opinion, is to introduce a way of thinking that would cause people to process information emotionally instead of rationally. And that's why I rail against deconstruction thinking all the time, is that it's an irrational basis for evaluation. There's an absence of logic and rhetoric. When you went to school, did you take any courses in logic or rhetoric?
No.
No. It's been completely eliminated. This is why I love classical approach to education, because everything's about rhetoric and everything's about logic. And that's what produces a mind that can creatively expand our scientific knowledge. Mm. There is a denial of objective truth. And this is really scary. What a lot of people are not aware of is that almost every law school is 100% woke. People don't know that. And so every lawyer doesn't believe in an objective law anymore. It's just, what can I make it and how can I manipulate it? And so this actually produces chaos. So we have gone to a three-body problem now, because what we have is we have Protestant Christianity. It influenced our society, but now this intellectualism has taken root and it's growing. And so then you have the everyday person. And so you have these three bodies and it's become so chaotic. And then the question is for you, the listener, how do you fight back? What can you do? What can you focus on? What can you emphasize that makes a tangible and real difference in this chaotic world in which you live? That's what we're trying to do in this series.
Well, with our time remaining, I know the title of the series is Five Proofs of God, right? Like, how do we know that he exists?
Yes.
We're going into the first proof this week. Can you give us just kind of a preview of what that proof is? Give us kind of a walkthrough on that?
Yeah, well, there's multiple proofs of God, and some are stronger than others.
Okay.
The first one isn't the strongest, but I think it's kind of the easiest one to digest, and we're going to kind of ease people into this.
Okay.
And it's basically this. We're going to face this attack against faith and the irrationality of it by facing it head on, okay? And that's what these proofs are, is they are rational, not only defenses, but they are rational postulates that defeat these other chaotic things that are going on in our society. And the first one I want to introduce to you was introduced by C.S. Lewis in his book, The Mere Christianity, and it's basically called the moral argument. Now, Dr. William Legge Craig, he phrases it this way. In what I'm going to introduce to you is called a logical equation, otherwise known as a syllogism. And that basically means you have one premise plus a second premise. Now, if the first premise is true and you can't defeat it, and the second premise is true and you can't defeat it, then the conclusion is absolutely necessary. Meaning, based on logic, you cannot deny it. So here is the first premise. Without God, there are no objective moral values. What I'm describing is the moral argument in C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity book. Premise one, without God, there are no objective morals or duties. Premise two, there are objective morals and duties. Therefore, there is a God. Now, the beauty of logic is when it's very simple.
Okay.
And so what a person does is say, okay, well, there isn't a God, and you go, well, why, when it comes to morality? Well, the first premise is this. You have to argue that it is possible to have an objective moral code, an objective duty without God, and that is impossible to do, okay? Most of the emphasis from atheists, scientific materialists, and secularists is an attempt to come up with some sort of way to deny that moral relativism exists without God. But this is an absolute dumpster fire. In the end, all morality is subjective if there's no objective moral authority. It's one or the other. You have to have an objective. Now, Sam Harris, he wrote a book. What he tries to do is he says, well, the actual objective morality is anything that extends human flourishing. You're like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, because look at the second premise. The reason all these atheists are trying to rationalize an objective morality is because no one lives as a moral relativist. The second premise is this. There are objective morals and duties. In other words, every person believes there are things that are wrong no matter what. It's always wrong no matter what. It is always wrong. I don't care what culture you're in. I don't care who you think you are to enslave another human being. It's wrong, right? Or how about this? It is wrong to practice human sacrifice, killing children to any belief system. Yeah, that's wrong. Across the board, we need to stop that. It's just wrong. So no society ever that has been built on moral relativism, none, or subjective morality. No society has ever continued to survive when it adopted moral relativism. This is today why people say, well, America is being pushed to become a moral relativistic society under the guise of diversity. And if this movement of moral relativism completely takes root, there won't be an America because it's impossible. It's just basic gravitational force. And that is, no society has ever adopted moral relativism and survived. It's never happened in the history, any recorded history that we have. It's really so funny because I just read this morning about Richard Dawkins, the guy who wrote The God Delusion.
Okay.
He's a famous atheist. And it's so funny because he's now saying, well, actually, I'm a cultural Christian. And they're like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I'm happy that people don't believe in God, but Christianity is the culture. I love the hymns and I love the Christmas carols. I love all this stuff, right? And he said, so I don't like the fact that England is being Islamicized. You know, he goes, I don't like that there's portions of England now that are purely Islamic, no-go zones. And I'm saying, what did you expect? That you're getting exactly what you wanted. This is exactly what you wanted in your there is no God. All it comes down to is power. Who is the strongest from a power standpoint?
Right.
Who can crush the other one? My stated purpose in doing this entire series is to help people find and discover authentic happiness or joy. And you're not going to find it by doing one thing that produces this outcome and then surprised when you get what you wanted. Richard Dawkins. I want everybody to live a really great life. I want people to squeeze every ounce of meaning and purpose and significance out of this life. And so I'm going to go after your thinking, because you live in a world over the last 50 years that has told you to reject, criticize, judge, and perceive in a negative light the only path that brings real joy and real happiness to life, and that is Christianity.
Well, thank you, Pastor, so much for walking us through this. I really appreciate you taking this issue head on, because I think it's just going to make us all stronger in our faith. It's going to help us be better witnesses and talk with other people who are potentially on the fence or don't believe. And it gives us some ways to start working through that with them, right? I mean, It's ultimately up to the Holy Spirit to kind of run it home, but we can start opening the door with them through these kinds of things.
Amen.
So, thank you so much for that. We'll see you guys on Thursday as we dive even deeper into the five proofs of God here on the Salty Pastor Podcast.
Think for yourself.
All right, Jake, let's reset and get started on the next one.
This one can be a little shorter. I have less...